Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Dassey Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, Jeremy. Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Loads of lovely people, talented people for you to meet today. We have Gordon Darcy, former international rugby player. Of course, he played for Leinster as well and Clongowes Wood. And Paul Howard, they've written a book together. We have some lovely, really lovely music from Clare Sands and Breedine. It's a real stomper. And I'd say when the clubs are back open, this is going to be huge. It's one of those songs you'd play at the end of a night, whatever time it finishes now. Did they still finish at 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock? Whatever. Anyway, this is one of the songs. And they're going to play it live for us from Studio 8. And we're going to find out about Ireland's biggest stag. Now, when I heard that, I thought it was, you know, 50 guys in a room without masks. But it's not. It's a wildlife stag as opposed to a wildlife stag, if you know what I mean. And this is big news, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. After 4 o'clock, we have DJ extraordinaire all the way from Black Lion in County Cavan dropping some beats. Nevin Maguire, ladies, on the wheels of steel. Dave on sound is puntastic today. So Nevin Maguire, the chef, DJing today. Drum and bass, or bass, fish, you see, yeah. From Ducks to Decks, turn up the beat, mix it up. There's another one for you, Dave. Mix it up, mix it up, mix it up. There you go. So any more puns between chefing and DJing are welcome to 51551. While we're on music, big news today in the music world. It's the biggest in a long time. Adele has released the first song from her new CD, LP, album, whatever you call it now. And it's called Easy On Me. If you listen to Claire Byrne this morning, she played it. And then she played a bit of comedy. And then she told a few jokes herself. And then she went to an ad break. That's the way things are going here. But no, Claire played it. And it's called Easy On Me. And speaking to Zoe Ball on the BBC this morning, Adele says, I was singing things I didn't even realise I was feeling or thinking, because a lot of the songs are about her breakup with her husband. I feel like I can't unlock a door for my own mental health and take the key with me. I've got to leave it in the door for everyone else. And I'm in a strong place now where I feel like I can put that vulnerability out there. So when she's saying that, she says, you know, she writes these songs about her own, what's going on in her head, and they're there for all of us to listen to. Don't we? Immediately recognisable as Adele. Easy On Me. You'll be hearing a lot of that in the coming weeks and months. On me. Thank you, Adele. Thank you. It's the weekend and people are going out. Well, not full out. That's next week. Hopefully, fingers crossed. See what happens on Monday and Tuesday. But we found a meme online about the way Irish mothers say goodbye compared to our international counterparts. So, say in America, mom, I'm going out. See ya. In Poland, is that Poland, is it? Mom, I'm going out in Polish. Do widzenia, they would say. And then there's a Chinese version. In America, or in Great Britain, I should say, mom, I'm going out, bye. And then in Ireland, it'll be happening in you know, houses all over the country this evening, maybe tomorrow evening. Mom, I'm going out. Out? Where? With who? Who'll pick you up? Who'll drop you off? What time do you reckon you'll be home at? It's all out with you. This house is like a hotel to you. How much money? Have you got it? Will I revolute you some money? No time for us anymore. Only going out. When I'm gone, then you'll know. Then you'll miss me when I'm gone. I just said I'm going out, ma. And that's the big thing, isn't it? Revolute now. If you have teenagers, you need to revolute them the money. And it's painless, because it's not like the old days where you went to your wallet or your pocket and you had to take the physical money out and count it out and hand it over. Now it's just a little thing, an app, choo-choo-choo, beep-beep-pew, off you go, beep-beep-beep. It's like it never happened. But it did, of course, because it was taken out of your account, your Revolut account. And we were chatting about Revolut at the meeting today. And we were just saying that some people are very wary of it, particularly people, you know, of an older generation who are used to going into a bank and actually seeing a person and seeing real money. Remember those days? Remember those days you used to be able to do that? Now, if you're of an age, you find it very handy, particularly if you're out, you know, because six people out for a meal, the bill comes and they're not going to divide it. I'll pay for it. And then everybody Revolutes me. And I get all the bing, 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 bing on my phone and I can check them all. And before I leave the restaurant, I have all the money in my account. Very handy. Very handy. And it's handy, as I said, for teenagers. There's a downside, of course. You can't treat people anymore, you know, because you've no control if they Revolute you. You understand? It's an app, you see, and you have money in it from your account. And if you have somebody's telephone number in it, you can Revolute them money. And vice versa, if they have your telephone number, they can Revolute you money. Now, it's real money. You have to have money. You know, you can't, it's not fictional money. But anyway, just say you said to somebody, no, I'm getting it. This is mine. This is my shout. And you go up and you pay the bill and you feel a nice fuzzy feeling about being generous. And it's a friend of yours, so you are generous. Next thing you're in the taxi on the way home or in the car driving home and ping. What have they done? They've paid. They've paid half as well. They've given you the money in the Revolut. And that's one of the downsides. Going out for dinner. Sharon Corr. She's been talking to a radio station in Manchester about being single. She says, it's been a transition for me to be a single woman, although I'm absolutely loving it. It's wonderful. But if you're with someone for 23 years, she was with her former partner, and then all of a sudden, I mean, you don't know how to do the other thing. So how do you do it anymore? She was asking. Where do you pick up guys? Supermarkets? Where do you do it these days? Not that I'm running picking up guys, but she just doesn't know because she's 51. She says it's uncharted territory for her. So what she decided to do is she's getting herself comfortable as a single mother on my own before I think about anything else. So that's her. But we were talking to Margaret last week and there's loads of people out there, people who are out of their first relationship and single again, and they're in their 40s, 50s, 60s and looking for love again, or maybe not. So there's definitely something. We're going to do more on that. We might organise a night, speed dating or something like that. Let's bring back speed dating. And you have to be over. You have to show your birth cert at the door. We haven't decided what the cutoff point is yet. Yeah. Dice, dice, baby. Hey, dice, dice. Get that, dice, dice, baby. Yeah. Soya Division. Celine Dijon. You'd be playing some Celine Dijon. These are great. Nevin's going to do a jam session, says Mary. And is Nevin going to cook some records? Records, spuds, you see, records, yeah, as opposed to roosters. Hot cross fade, as opposed to a hot cross bun. And I think that's gorgeous and very familiar, says Una. Oh, Adele, that's Una. That's not for Nevin Maguire. That's for Adele, a reference to Adele. Now today, the funeral took place at Paddy Maloney, and his son Angus spoke at the funeral, and he was one of the principal mourners, Angus, Aideen and Padraig, Paddy's sons, and Rita, his wife, and our thoughts are still with him. But Angus said some lovely words about his dad. He said, I'm sure you would have been... Oh, here, wait, I better go back up here. Here it is, yeah. His son Angus paid tribute to him, saying he opened to 1 million people for the Pope. 1.2 million it was, actually. Opened for the Rolling Stones. And last Tuesday, he opened for the Budget. And then he addressed his dad, saying, I'm sure you would have been pleased to think Pascal, as in Pascal O'Donoghue, and Michael McGrath would have to wait until your announcements were done before they could stand up and address the House. And he said he lived for moments when he would walk out into the stage and say, I'm Paddy Maloney from Dublin, in Ireland, the greatest city in the world. And he never went anywhere without his tin whistle, or his wind whistle, or his wind thistle, as he called it, and always let his music do the talking. The late Paddy Maloney laid to rest today. And I know Adele is there, but I'd prefer to play this in the week that's in it. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon. I'm Paddy. We won't see the likes of him again. the late Paddy Maloney and the Chieftains on RT Radio 1. Now, a stag believed to be the largest in Ireland has been photographed in a remote area of Killarney National Park, christened the Grand Master. The red deer stag is likely to be 7, maybe 9 years old and was photographed by former conservation ranger in Killarney National Park, Peter O'Toole. And Peter is on the line now. How are you doing, Peter?
Good, Ray.
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
He's an impressive looking animal.
He is, but I just correct you on one. You know, he's not the largest stag in Ireland. He's the largest native red deer that we have probably seen in our time in the Killarney area, because the only place where you'll find native red deer now in Ireland are in here in the southwest of Ireland, mainly in Killarney.
So there'd be different types of deer that'd be bigger?
Yeah, well, you could have introduced animals. Most of the deer elsewhere in Ireland are introduced, and they might have come from Eastern Europe or Scotland or whatever. Yeah. But there is a native population surviving here in Killarney since Neolithic times, since the first farming people introduced them here 6,000 years ago. So they've been here, and they've had an unbroken history right through that period, you know. So it's very unique, really, that they're still surviving here, you know.
When did you take the picture, Peter?
Early yesterday morning. I stalked him. I knew he was, I kind of had vibes that he was there. And I had to do a bit of stalking to get quite close enough to him.
How close did you get?
I got within maybe 100 yards or less, do you know what I mean?
And, yeah.
You can see that he was alert to me. He was looking straight at me.
He's looking straight at you. That's the thing. Is that a bit scary?
Not at all.
No, I mean,
like, in fairness, stags, even during the rutting time when they're most aggressive, they'd really run away from you rather than confront you. The only time they might attack is if you cornered one or if they were in an enclosed situation, like in a deer farm where people have been killed, farmers have been killed by rutting stags in a fenced area. You know, the stag would probably see them as a threat or something, or a rival, and people have been attacked. But in the wild, I don't think we've ever had an attack. by a native red stag here in the Killarney area.
What are his dimensions?
He'd be about, I suppose, lightweight, about around the 250 kilos, you know. That's big, like, he's several hundred pounds weight. And his shoulder height would be around 120 to 140 centimetres. And then he's a massive head of antlers.
You know, they're impressive
structure,
looking.
Bigger than I think I've ever seen before.
Yeah.
You know, so we've had big stags in the past, but this guy, I named him the Grand Master because I was a ranger in the park for 40 years and I was walked around deer for 20 of those at least, and I never saw anything as big as this guy, you know.
Yeah, his antlers just like, they must have very strong necks. He's carrying a lot of weight there, isn't he?
Well, coming up to the rut, their neck muscles swell.
Like,
it's all about the levels of testosterone in the blood, and coming up to the rut, the levels of testosterone in the blood are at their peak. So then they become aggressive, and their neck muscles swell, and that's all about fighting as well.
Yeah.
Because when they fight, obviously, if their neck wasn't strong enough, they could end up with a broken neck. You know what I mean?
And do they train for that? Because I know it's rutting season now, starts in September until the end of October. But before they actually engage with another stag, do they knock off trees or anything like that?
No, that's mostly out of aggression.
You'd see them kind
of trashing the ground and trees. It's all to do with the pump. They're pumped up, which is like young guys coming out of a pub at night or something. But they're all pumped up with testosterone and they're trashing everything out of aggression. Do you know what I mean? But they rarely come together. I mean, this guy, I call him the Grand Master because nothing will challenge him.
No, that's my next question. So will somebody take a look at him and go, oh, you're fine, whatever, do whatever you like there?
Yeah.
Is that the way it goes?
No, they can size each other up without ever coming together. The frequency of roaring, and they'll do a parallel walk as well before they fight. They'll walk parallel to each other, and they're all the time sizing each other up. And if they're not of equal body size, they won't come together. It's only stags of equal body size will come together. Antlers really don't come into the equation much at the end of the day as body size, because it's all about violent pushing when they're fighting. And it's the guy with the biggest body weight will win the fight. You know what I mean?
So he's likely to be left untouched.
Oh, he's the grand master.
Right.
A master stag is what we normally refer to as a master stag is a stag that's dominant in his area. He's holding the females and he's warding off all challengers, and you know, he's the one that will most likely mate with those females, the hinds.
So how many females would he mate with?
A red stag could mate with 40 or 50 females, no problem.
In one season, okay.
Usually they're kind of, you know, there's a wide distribution of deer, so in one area you might have up to, you know, 10, 20 females or less even. So at the moment he's holding about 12 females on the side of a mountain, which is quite good because they're usually more dispersed than the mountain there than they are in the lowland areas of the national park, you know.
And you used to live in the national park?
I still do, actually.
Oh, you still do, do you? Right, no, it says past tense here, but you still do, right?
Ah, yeah.
And this is your passion?
It's been my life, really, do you know what I mean? And you know, I do a lot of landscape photography rather than wildlife photography, but and it's all the park. I never go outside the park. Like, there's such a variety of habitat types and views in the park to keep you going forevermore. So, you know what I mean?
You're very lucky to have that there.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
So that's your garden,
that's Peter. My garden, 26,000 acres.
Now, put that in your pipe and smoke and Michael
that's
D.
Right,
Higgins.
Yeah, Michael, right. Yeah. But this guy, hopefully now he's not disturbed. I mean, he's in a very, you know, kind of undisturbed location in the park. And I know some of the conservation rangers are keeping an eye on that area because he is a kind of a unique animal and he's beautiful.
I love the fact that he's looking down the barrel of your lens there.
Oh,
staring at you.
Usually they do. If you disturb deer, they're alarmed by it and they're looking towards the source of the disturbance.
Of course, yes.
They lock onto you. Yeah. They won't take their eyes off you until, you know, you either leave the area or, you know, and they'll... just in case, you know, you come for them or whatever, you know. They're very
mindful,
you know,
of you and what you're doing. Yeah.
Like all wild animals, I suppose, they have a great fear of humans, so for good reason.
Peter, thanks so much for introducing us to the Grand Master.
My pleasure.
It's an amazing picture. I'm sure it'll be in the papers tomorrow for people
to
see.
I hope so. He deserves it.
And so do you. Thanks, Peter.
All right, Ray. Thanks for
now. That's Peter O'Toole now, former ranger and photographer down in the Killarney National Park. We'll take a quick commercial break. No, this won't fire for me. Computer says no.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, they're back for their third book in Gordon's Game series. Gordon's Game, Lion's Roar, chronicles his journey as he fights for a place in the Lion squad. So Gordon, the Gordon in the book, and is the Gordon here, Gordon Darcy. Good afternoon. And his co-writer is Paul Howard. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon, right? Yeah.
What I love about this, Gordon, is that you get a chance to rewrite history.
To be honest, we don't rewrite that much of history. As much to my embarrassment, most of the things in it are pretty accurate.
Probably
the only thing that I play in a test series.
Yes.
That's the bit we have to take a little bit of artistic.
And you come out as the hero, obviously.
I'm normally the guy one phase away from the hero moment.
So this is the third one. How did it all start?
Gordon rang me. I'd a missed call from Gordon one day, and Gordon occasionally appears as a kind of character in the Ross books and the Ross columns.
Very important
character. Yeah. Like, for instance, like, there was one time I had one storyline once where Ross and Gordon are both in the running for the McGee menswear contract. Like, who's going to get the advertising contract? And Gordon got it in the end. But he would occasionally pop up. And so when I saw his number, I went, oh no, have I pushed it? And I was trying to remember what I'd written in the latest book. And there was a couple of lines about him in the latest book. I thought it might have been about that. So I let it go to voicemail. And I listened back to the voicemail message. And he said, and it wasn't about that, thankfully. And he said he wanted to write a book. And I thought he wanted to write his autobiography, a straight autobiography. And I wasn't, to be honest, I wasn't that interested. So I was kind of thinking,
why is it not interesting enough for you?
Well, of the 15...
I can't say it when it's true.
It's not Gordon.
Well, all right. Well, no, well, yeah, okay. But yeah, I was kind of, how am I going to get out of this? So of the 15 players who were on the Grand Slam winning team with Gordon, like I think 13 of them have written autobiographies. So they're essentially covering the same period of time, the same material, but just from their points of view. But then when Gordon said, I want to do it as a series of children's books, I just went, that is just inspired. Yeah. It's a brilliant idea. And one of the things that really frustrates me, I buy books all the time for, you know, nephews and nieces and you know, children of friends. And it frustrates me that there are so few books out there for children about sport. Ger Siggins, who's a friend of mine, he's got the Rugby Spirit or the Gaelic Spirit series, and they're fantastic. But beyond that, you're really struggling. And it's always kind of bothered me because we love sport so much because it's full of drama. It's unscripted drama. And as a kid, I used to read like Roy of the Rovers and, you know, these comic strips about sporting heroes who the last minute, you know, of a match, they would score a winner.
That's you, Gordon.
And I thought, why are there no books like that, you know? So,
but that was part of the, like, the pitch, for want of a better way, because I had an idea in my head, and that's all it was they're going, okay, a lot of the stuff you do in professional sport, bar like the real high pressure moments, it's quite juvenile, and a lot of the, like, the way you just kind of interact with each other. So you can be, like, I went into as an 18-year-old and sharing a dressing room with like 34, 35-year-olds. And like, they're as big a kids, like Gary Halpin is a friend of ours who passed away recently. He was one of the biggest kids and so much fun, but then switching on as a professional.
Yeah.
And it was like going, so, you know, I had to pitch this to Paul, and a part of it was that, you know, kids, when they visualize themselves being Johnny Sexton today, you know, the hitting over the kick and, you know, making the pass, they don't see themselves as an adult in that. They see themselves
as a kid.
Yes. In that moment. Yes. Yeah. And logic doesn't go out the window.
Yeah.
So Paul got this straight away because, and was actually able to explain it in how writers explain things. And really, like, from the moment we chatted about it, it was just like, cool, we can take this somewhere.
Yeah.
And early on, we had so many debates early on. It took us about 4 months before we wrote a word, because we were debating about how it was going to work. Like, were all of the other players in the dressing room going to be kids as well? Like, were we looking at a 12-year-old Paul O'Connell, a little Paul O'Connell, and a 12-year-old Brian O'Driscoll, and a 12-year-old Johnny Sexton? And then we said, no, he's a 12-year-old Gordon Darcy playing with the grown-ups, right? And then we were thinking, how will kids buy that? And what we discovered when we started writing the book was, all you have to do with kids is tell them the rules, right? It's like, this is a story about a boy who's at wizard school, right? I'm not telling you how he got his wizard powers, but he's at wizard school. Or this is a story of a dinosaur who can talk.
Yes.
And once you explain the rules at the start to kids, they go, oh yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah. And there is autobiographical stuff in it.
Yeah.
Embarrassing stuff.
So did you work in the Ferry Carrick Hotel?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So
during the summers?
Yeah, so in, when Wexford won, the last time Wexford won the All-Ireland.
Lee Griffin was the manager.
He owned the hotel. And I remember I was a porter in the hotel. I remember
he managed Wexford, owned the hotel.
Sorry.
Managed Wexford.
Oh, yeah. Manager.
The manager of Wexford. He didn't manage the hotel. He owned it.
I remember going into like the week of the All-Ireland final, and Liam Griffin's there, Martin Story, and one or two, and I walking in, and I'd set the room up for a wedding, and I go in, and the words were out of my mouth before I realised who I was saying to. There was, lads, you're going to have to get out. I've got to set up this room for like a strategy meeting. And to be fair, like, so then they go, they win, they come back, and like I was handed the trophy, and I was basically going, I was bashed in, and like the Liam McCarthy Cup, and I was like, hide that, and I'll pick it up tomorrow. And like over to the one place I had, the only set of keys was the porter's cupboard. So in I go, and I was inside with the trophy, like, bashed up Liam McCarthy above the head, giving it that one.
And you played hurling. You were high standard.
I would have played hurling before I went to boarding school. So I only started playing rugby, you know, a year before I went to school. So when I was in school in Buntlody, like, I often forget my books, but I'd never forget my hurl.
Yeah. And Liam Griffin, have you met him since you've become a, you know?
Yeah, no, like Liam's a guy that I just trust his opinion on things. He's, you know, he's an incredible businessman. He's an incredible person. And he's been, you know, talked to him long and often about, you know, Wexford and hurling and just sport in general. And a guy I hugely admire.
Was this discussed at home that you would put a girlfriend or a friend who is a girl called Aoife in the book and you're married to an Aoife?
Yeah, well, I think the conversation happened between Paul and I first. And we were very conscious that this needed to be a book for everyone to enjoy. That was primarily about why Aoife kind of came into this, and you know, Paul was, you know, had a great vision for her, and I was like, actually, do you know, you're kind of describing my wife.
Yes.
So I said, you know, let's put Aoife in there.
And congratulations, you had a lockdown baby.
We did.
That's what they're called. That's what I believe they're called. Yeah.
Well, we actually got a second dog in January.
Right.
And then 6-7 weeks into lockdown, I was like, oh, now we're going to have a third baby. So now we all can't fit in one car.
Right. Oh, you poor things.
Yeah, well, 100 kg of dogs running around the house. But yeah, little Meadow, she is gas.
Did you ever see that video clip of the guy who walks his dogs out through the car window? Did you ever see that? It's amazing.
No.
It's some guy down the country. So he has 4 or 5 dogs, and he
just puts them on the lead and goes, takes them for a drive.
And he holds it out the window. He's in the driver's seat and he goes around the local park, and then the lads are just running along and saying, maybe you could do that. Maybe you could do that. So what ages are the... So obviously a very young one.
Yes, we've baby Meadow. She's going to be one...
Meadow.
Meadow, yeah.
Yeah,
so she's going to be one in November.
Yeah.
We have Lennon, who's going to be 5 in November. And then the original is Soleil, and she is 6 and a half.
Right. Lovely. So what do people say to you now? What do friends and relations say to you? Do they, you know, when you have your third child, do they, what comments do they make?
They're probably more comfortable about passing comments.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They're not really offended. Meadow came out with, like a full head of hair.
Right.
So she kind of looked like a little boy initially, and now she's starting most recent comments is she's starting to look like Soleil, which is an absolute positive, because she looks exactly like her mum. So she, thank God, looks nothing like me. So she falls into the cute category then.
Yeah. The last time you were in, you're in a suit. That's you're in a hoodie now and a t-shirt. Are you on a day off for promotion? Is that or
no? I work in a I work with my sister. We set up a tech company,
right?
So we're trying to find tech solutions for speech and language therapy.
Right, great. Oh, yeah. That's important work, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We're pretty exciting, and it's pretty rewarding as well.
Isn't it odd that Paul Howard is sitting here, you know, with you, who went to Clongowes and represented Ireland at rugby?
I'm going to preempt you. So everything, I represent everything that he...
Yeah, that he's like, that he made a living at. It's like an off. He made his name on slagging you off, Gordon. And now you're sitting, not only are you sitting beside him, but you're writing a book with him.
It just shows what a great sense of humour he has.
It's poetic.
See, he doesn't like to be reminded of that. You know?
I'm just glad Gordon could laugh at stuff, you know. But I'm always conscious of the fact that I've written stuff in the books that Gordon clearly hasn't read. And one day he might decide in his retirement.
But at some
sit down and read all of those Russell Carroll Kelly books.
At some point, you've also I also do have. I'm reasonably self aware. I do look back at some of the stuff I did.
Yeah.
And like,
go on,
heads
go on.
in hand stuff.
What's the most embarrassing thing you did?
Dyeing my hair blue.
Right.
Like really. Like. At what point did somebody not put their arm around me and just go, Gordon, we need to have a really, really long chat? Writing Southside on my boots, like that is the one that
we need
honestly,
to talk about this one.
Honestly, my face goes red.
Was it South on one and Side on the other?
So no, Southside on both of them.
Both of them, okay,
I wasn't that creative.
I mean, you can't get much more Southside than Wexford, by the way.
Yeah, like honestly, like, and this is what made writing the book so much fun, because like when you if you try to write this in an autobiography, it's dull.
Yeah.
But like when you actually ham it up on a kid, you can see a kid doing this, because I was a kid.
Yeah.
Like I was 18, and like Mick Quinn, the Irish international,
yeah.
His son, I'm very good
okay,
friends
okay.
with him.
So Mick was a pundit as well.
His son, we would have played, we would have played against each other. He was nicknamed as the revolving door because he never tackled. He always used to show people the thing through.
Good luck with the conversion.
Yeah, pretty much. He told me about the Southside thing, and I like it literally went over my head. Like no idea what this was all about. Guy coming up from Wexford, I was in a boarding school, so I'm not in Dublin. I had no idea. I was like, oh, that's a great thing to put in my boots. Yeah. And the Adidas guys, like, oh, will you do that? They were great. And then, like, you know, about 18 months later, you look back and you're like, oh, God.
Because there's a photograph of Gordon with the boots around his neck with Southside
and
on
it.
And the photograph
glow,
won't
the little,
die.
The little schmig and everything. It's like,
but,
oh.
you were the sort of the awkward pupil, weren't you? You were awkward, a bit awkward, were you?
Yeah, like, just immature.
Was that it?
Yeah, just, you know, really well-intended but misdirected.
Who was directing you? Just yourself?
No, that's the problem. Nobody. For every kid that's in the academy today, they have processes and things and everything. I probably helped create 99%
of them. but it's funny you say that, because I'm watching this brilliant documentary series at the moment about the Premiership and, you know, the Premier League and all that. And one of the hour-long things is about that Manchester United Academy group of people. Beckham, the Nevilles.
Yeah.
Who else was in it? Scholes,
Nicky Butt.
Nicky Butt, all those. Yeah. And you can see that all the protocols put in place were because maybe George Best, they'd made so many mistakes with George Best, didn't support him, didn't mind him, and now they were doing all of that.
So you were
the George Best, really, of...
literally, like, you arrive out and you're told, in you go, you know, go to the gym. Have you ever lifted weights before? No. So... okay, well, do this program. There's no, like, oh, let's start you gradually. I wrecked my back and I missed 3 months of the season. Right. You go in and just, like, you know, Trevor Brennan. I love Trevor Brennan. I'm scared of him to this day, but I love him. But his thing was, like, win or lose on the booze.
Yeah.
And you're kind of going, like, oh, right, what do I do here? Oh, yeah, you're doing that. That looks fun. I'll go do that. Rather than, say, some of my peers who'd be, say, Leo Cullen. Leo Cullen is one of those guys who's been a leader since he was probably in nappies.
Yeah.
You know, he just makes hard decisions look easy. And he wasn't, you know, off over there looking, you know, going with what the fun brigade are doing. He's there, what's best for my career? Whereas I was like, I'll do the fun brigade.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And then you learn
You came out the other side.
I did.
Yeah. So what about now? Because you were sort of the at the beginning of the professional era. And it seems like it's got more serious exponentially since then, hasn't it?
The fun seems to have gone out of the game a little bit.
In this book, your dad is telling you that Willie John McBride was in the dressing room of one of the Lions tours smoking a pipe.
Yeah.
And I played rugby with a guy who had a cigarette at half time. You know, that was...
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I played rugby with guys who had a cigarette before the game.
There a story that Rob Henderson scored a try for Ireland and felt something in his back pocket when in the days when shorts had pockets and it was a cigarette lighter.
Yeah, cigarette lighter. Peter Clawson used to have a fag before the meeting for the going on the internationals. Yeah. Well, I think, elite sport, it happens at the elite sport. Marginal gains, the whole theory behind that, everybody's looking for the smallest little bit out of it. But what I think is it's gotten too professional, or down through the ranks and in the underage rugby and in the schools rugby.
Yes.
Like, to this day, the rugby I really enjoyed, that was the purest and the most enjoyable, was schools rugby, because there was, and you were coached in a way to enjoy it. And I think if you don't enjoy rugby at the grassroots level, you're missing a fundamental piece of it, and it shouldn't be like, not that it's not about competition, but you need to give people the skills to enjoy and to a certain extent problem solve in sport, because some of the best thinkers in sport are the guys that are so creative. Dan Carter's, your Johnny Sexton's, Ronan O'Gara, they're guys who can see a problem on the field and they can
Brian
solve
O'Driscoll
it. Yep, Brian O'Driscoll. These guys who can, Paul Connell as a captain, can feel it.
Yeah, yeah.
That seems to have gone out of the game a little bit, where you've got players who can go into an unstructured and they can see something and do it and have the confidence.
They're not allowed to do it. No, wait,
it feels that way.
Okay. The most prolific man in Irish literature is Paul Howard, sitting next to me. You have three new books on shelves right now. Is that correct? Yes?
It was four this year.
Oh,
is it correct?
So Normal Sheeple, 21st, Russell Carl Kelly.
Yeah.
Your first children's book that isn't with...
Yeah, the first non-Gordon.
Aldrin Adams and the Cheese Nightmares.
Which
is Tom's reading, which is And
Gordon's Game.
Where do you get the time?
Well, to be honest, the last 18 months I've had nothing but time.
Right.
You know, during the lockdown, Mary and I were in Avoca for all of it. It was just really quiet down there. There was nothing, you know, nothing to do but work, you know. And I really kind of threw myself into it. Like, I knew when we were locking down, I knew I had a lot of work on, and I knew I had these work deadlines. And for the first few weeks, I was going, well, thank God for that, because, you know, I've now got some space and some time. And about 4 weeks into it, I really started to feel it, like the just the pandemic, just being locked down, missing friends and missing family and all the rest. So there really wasn't anything to do
but right
during that time, but right,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. You know, you've scored a massive own goal here, because now all your editors and yes, all your production companies yeah, go, this guy can do four books a year.
No. We brought out a book of Ross O'Carroll Kelly columns in April called Rock of Ages, and it was the best of 25 years of Ross columns. So yeah, it was quite a lot.
That's an achievement. Have you been on to the Guinness Book of Records? So writes four, gets into another one. Well, that's always a bestseller as well, isn't it?
You and I, we were having a conversation the last time I was on. I mean, you said, like, there's 21 Ross books. Like, is that a record for a series? Yeah. You know?
So you went home and looked it up. Yes,
no, I didn't go home. I Googled it on the way out of the studio here. And anyway, there's a Japanese author has written this series, and there's 128 books in the series. So, you know, I've a bit to go, but I'm not saying I won't write 128 Ross books.
Yeah. Well, we know that Dublin's just going to keep giving you material, so there's no reason.
It does, yeah.
So you were tweeting about the late Paddy Maloney, because you met him through the book you wrote
About Tara.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was a regular visitor to Lugalaw when I was working on the Tara Brown book to visit Garrick Brown. Yeah. I became really good friends with Garrick, and, you know, we were often invited, Mary and I, up for dinner in the house. And when you went to the house, he would say, you know, come for dinner on Wednesday night, and you never knew who was going to be there.
Right.
And Bono could be there, the Estonian ambassador to Ireland could be there, Pierce Brosnan, you know, absolutely any of his friends in any combination.
And Garrick's set up Clatter Records with Paddy.
Yeah. And Paddy was often there. Paddy and John Borman were kind of the staples of that drawing room. And I remember being there when Paddy played the Illan Pipes. And I remember just saying, just to myself, just remember this moment, because this is a privilege to actually see this man. This is a man who worked with Sting, you know, Paul McCartney.
No, don't start the list, because it's a very long list.
It's incredible. Pavarotti, like, and such a diverse, like, he would go off to Mexico and work with, you know, Mexican musicians. And he was a genius, and he was such a quiet man as well. You know, he was just so low key, and you'd sit and you'd have a lovely chat with him, and then he'd get up and he would just make this magic happen.
And that's what his son Angus said at the funeral today, that he always let the music speak, do the talking.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he was just so quiet, and you would never know. Like, I mean, of course, everybody knows Paddy Maloney. I grew up knowing Paddy Maloney. But to meet him, he was just, everything was kind of under the radar, and then he would just make this
amazing
magic.
Man. He'd be sadly missed. Gordon Darcy, Munster are looking very good. I was watching them last weekend, aren't they?
They are looking very, very good.
And that was their sort of second string team they had on last week.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I even wrote an article about it to say how good they're looking. They've gotten really bad luck with RG Snyman getting injured. And, like, I've been on pitches with players that just add something completely almost existential to a team.
Magical, like, nearly.
And he is that player, you know. I was kind of wondering out loud, do they have insurance for him? Could they cut him loose? Could they get a replacement in? Because I just think Munster, they need to win something this year. They need a big lump in the second row to compete against the French and the English teams. Mm. And it was just, everything was going too well for them. Yeah. But I think they are going to challenge. If he's back in the frame next May, kind of late April, next May, and this group of players will definitely get themselves to
And they're young.
Yeah. Ben Healy was incredible. Just disappointed he's not on the bench this week. But listen, I think for Irish rugby, we want to see Munster back. Yeah. And as much as it pains me to say that as the next Leinster player, but Leinster were at their best when Munster were at their best.
Yeah. It's the rivalry, isn't it?
Yep.
Gordon's game, Lions Roar. Gordon takes on the South Africans. And this isn't a spoiler, but he wins.
Single-handedly.
Yeah, single-handedly. You're so good. You're so brilliant, Gordon. You're such a hero. And, of course, Norma Sheeple and Aldrin Adams and the Cheese Nightmares in bookshops as well for Paul Howard. Paul, great to see you. Gordon,
likewise,
great to see you.
Ray. Thanks so much.
Mind yourselves. Yeah, you'll have to fire that again. The old computer is acting up today.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Actually, I came up with a brilliant idea during the ad break there. I've convinced Gordon and Paul to stay with us because we're doing a test run of our new quiz. So you're okay to stay until after 4 o'clock?
Perfectly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because so, I just wanted to sort of quiz test dummies.
Well, I'll definitely take the dummies part of that. It's going to be embarrassing.
Right, and you can stay on, you can listen because we're going to Studio 8 now. And over there, we have Claire Sands and Bree Dean. Good afternoon, Claire and Bree Dean.
Hello.
How's it going, Ray?
How are you? Great to have you in. Bree Dean, you've been in before. Claire, you haven't.
No, I'm a virgin Studio 8.
You're a virgin Studio 8. So let's find out a little bit about you. Where are you from?
I'm from Cork. I'm a fearless, feisty fiddler from Cork.
Right. A fearless, feisty fiddler from Cork. Very good.
It's great. Almost like she had that prepared.
Well, I think she did, Bree Dean. I think she did, you'll find. And you're left Cork and where are you now living?
I'm in between Connemara and Cork at the moment. I moved to Connemara at the start of the lockdown and swimming in the sea and making music out there and all around the place at the moment, playing away and doing some exciting projects and meeting up with Bree Dean along the way as well.
Yeah, and one of your exciting projects involves Bree Dean and it involves the four provinces. So talk me through that.
It does indeed. It's called Tírdhreacha agus Fiúmdhreacha, which is soundscapes and landscapes. So I've been travelling around Ireland for the whole year throughout the four seasons in the four provinces, working with four different collaborators. So the first one of those was with my good friend Susan O'Neill up in County Clare. I then went up north to Steve Cooney and Tommy Sands. Then I met the bowled Bree Dean in Sligo. She's the Connacht collaborator, and I've the new Leinster collaboration coming out with Liam and Wainley in a couple of weeks. So
great.
It's kept me going and it's been just beautiful to work with so many amazing souls.
I'm really looking forward to hearing this live because we've played it, the recorded version of it. Bree Dean, how did you and Claire meet?
In UCC down in Cork, we just kind of we just had great crack together playing tunes and going around to different sessions and everything. And we always knew we'd play something, we'd do something together.
And have you got some sort of alliteration type title for yourself with the harp? No,
the bowled Bree Dean.
The bowled Bree Dean, the bowled Bree Dean, and the bowled harp. Right. Okay. And of course, people will know you because your dad and the business, the family business. You're undertakers, and you are an undertaker yourself.
I am, yeah.
Funeral directors, they call them. They don't call them undertakers
anymore,
do they?
No, funeral director in Embalmer. So yeah, he let me off for the day to come up to Dublin.
And play the harp with Claire. Right, okay. So Studio 8. So the background to the song then, who's best equipped to tell me that?
Claire. Thanks, Breed. I rocked up to Enniscrone for 4 or 5 days to spend a week with Bree Dean and her family and to take in Enniscrone, everything that I saw, the soundscapes and the landscapes. And this is what we came up with. So the song is about, I suppose, a fictional walk with Sligo greats, with Yeats, with Queen Maeve, with Kevin Burke, and just amazing to have Bree Dean by my side. And we made a fairly wild music video that depicts, I suppose, the best way to describe it is the Irish summer, in that it was piss and rain.
And this is an anthem for our times, I think. I was just saying that it'll be one of those songs that will be played at the end of nightclubs when they open up again next week. Intak Vebio, it's good to be alive. When you're ready.
Thank you.
Claire Sands and Bree Dean over in Studio 8. Gramila Mila Magav. Thank you so much. And that's available to download and stream and whatever you like. Eintok Vet Bio, It's Good to Be Alive. I don't have time now, but I did up a remix of that for you at home. So I'm going to send it on to you.
Savage. Exciting. Yeah. Are you dancing as well in it? Or?
No. It's
that's my dancing, isn't it?
Look, we've a couple of seconds. Just have a quick listen to it. So I was thinking, you know, right? Needs a good drum beat.
And then I'd say you should stick to the radio ring.
Hold on. Do you hear that? It'll work perfectly. I'm telling you. You have to remix that song. I'll take 5%. Okay, good luck, Claire. See you, Breedine.
Thanks.
No appreciation there of my ability at all.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, apologies, we're quite late. Apologies. Nishtoshin and Reprieve Skelton in Oakdala, Barbani Kushla. Gurma, good Barbara. Thank you very much. We've still to go to Studio 8, where we have Dex set up and DJ Nev Maguire. We'll be spinning some tunes here before the end, just to get you in the humour for the weekend. Now, we're giving our quiz of today a rest, and we're starting a new quiz on Monday. But we decided we'd try it out with Gordon Darcy and Paul Howard. They volunteered. It's called Reeling in the Ears. Okay. Reeling in the Ears, you see, right?
Ah,
yeah, we couldn't call it the other thing.
I like what you did there.
Well, there's to be solicitor's letters and all that sort of thing, right? We have to say we borrowed a little from our friends in TV. We've gathered up sounds, songs and clips from over the years and decades. You know, music, news reports, TV shows, movies. And you two now are going to listen to the clips,
okay,
and answer questions on them. That's how it works. There's a little bit of a twist in that if a short clip gets you 2 points and a longer clip gets you 1 point.
Okay.
You see, so you can choose which to go
for. Are we in competition with each other?
Yes, you are. Yeah, that's quiz. It's a quiz. It's a quiz, yeah. So it's
the
two.
The tension is just suddenly.
two for short, one for long, right? For long. Okay. Yeah, and this will be the theme tune. Afternoon, welcome along to Reeling in the Ears. Today our contestants are Gordon Darcy from Dublin and Paul Howard from Dublin. Good afternoon to you both.
I'm from Wexford.
Yes, from Wexford. Right. Okay.
Bonus point, Gordon.
The winner gets a mug and the runner-up gets 2 mugs. There you go. Now, okay. So we go to you first, Gordon. Question number one, Reeling in the Ears. Have a listen. Oh, sorry. Are you going to go for short or long?
I'm going to go for long.
You're going to go for long for 1 point. Okay.
I'm still going to get it wrong.
Have a listen to this.
I must have been at about 40,000 feet when it happened. Hit an air pocket. Dropped. But we crashed 1,000 miles off course. They're looking for us in the wrong place.
So our year today in Reeling in the Ears is 2004. So can you name that cult American TV drama that first aired in 2004 for 1 point?
Oh, Lost.
Lost is the correct answer. You should have went for short. Okay, so Paul, chance for you to go in front. You can go short for two, long for one.
I'm going to go short.
No pressure.
You're going to go short. Okay.
This would be embarrassing.
Have a listen to this.
You're all being very noisy.
Name that children's TV show that first aired in 2004 for 2 points.
SpongeBob SquarePants.
Can I answer?
No, you don't. You can, but you don't get any extra points.
That's
go on.
Peppa Pig.
It is Peppa Pig. You get no points there.
That is ridiculous. That is 3-0.
No, it's not.
You can take your scoring system and shove it. That's 3-0.
Okay, back to you.
He's very competitive, isn't he?
Back to you, Gordon.
We've written three books together. You're only getting this now.
This is music from 2004. So are you going to go one for long, two for short?
I go short.
Short.
5-0.
Okay. 2 points. I want the name of the song and the singer. Here we go.
No. Right, even if you played the whole song, it wouldn't get that.
Ding, ding. What? Toxic Britney Spears.
Yes, but you don't get any extra points for that and you get no points.
We'll debate that later on. We'll talk to the RTE authority about that.
Get in the taxi, get so, out.
Paul.
I can't believe you knew that.
Paul Howard, you have no points on the board. Are you going to go...
I'm going to go short.
You're going to go short for 2 points.
I have to,
short
really,
for 2 points. You know. Okay, song and band from this 2004 hit.
You too.
Yeah.
Elevation.
No, Vertigo. We needed both. No points there.
That's embarrassing.
And you're a YouTube fan, aren't you?
No, I'm not really.
Oh, yeah, no.
Let's call
this exactly what it is. No. You got Britney Spears and you did not get U2. Let's let that not be lost.
I did get U2. I just got the wrong song.
No, you got it wrong.
Okay, after two clips, Gordon Darcy is on one, Paul Howard is on zilch. Okay, I wouldn't say that now if you were a caller because it'd be a lot nicer to you. Gordon, on the last question, are you going to go for a 2 or a 1?
I'm going to go for a long.
You're going to go for a long?
I'll go for the honourable draw.
Okay. This is the way they fall now. This could have been you when you're going to say, you're going to call fix. But here's the question. Crushed. Ireland won the Triple Crown in 2004 for the first time since 1985. Can you name this Irish international giving his reaction to the historic win? And you said long. Okay, here we go.
I don't know, am I elated now or just relieved, you know? We were shaky enough there, but we're professionals to come through in the last 20 minutes. That was really satisfying, you know?
Who was that?
2004.
Yes.
He's a mate of yours.
I thought I knew it at the start. It's Paul O'Connell.
It is Paul O'Connell. Yes.
I thought his voice was going to break halfway through that.
Wrong.
It'd be as embarrassing as you getting Britney Spears over
YouTube. You're on two, and this is why this quiz is so exciting.
This better be a question about Ross O'Carroll Kelly. Paul Howard,
if you go short for 2 points, it takes us to a tie-break situation.
I'll go short.
You have no option. I'll go short. Okay. Dr. Claire O'Leary made history in 2004 with the help of this clip. Tell me what she achieved. Listen carefully.
Dusty, can you hear me? Myself and Claire O'Leary, the first Irish woman to...
Now I'll have a different question, thanks.
So Dr. Claire O'Leary made history in 2004 with the help of this clip. Tell me what she achieved. Because we're introducing it, I'm going to give you the clip again. I shouldn't really... Gordon,
that's
I know...
Fine,
yeah,
that's
okay,
fine.
Have a listen.
Okay.
Dusty, can you hear me? Myself and
Claire
O'Leary, the first Irish woman to...
Oh, the hints.
Climb Everest.
Let's have a listen to the long version.
Dusty, can you hear me? Myself and Claire O'Leary, the first Irish woman to summit Mount Everest, is now sitting right...
There you go. 29,000. And that's Pat Falvey. On a satellite phone. So
who says guessing does not work?
it was an educated guess. I heard the wind.
What, you heard wind and you went Everest?
Well, I could hear the snow as well.
Okay, so we're into a tiebreak situation. Whoever answers nearest to the correct answer wins the prize. Okay.
Nearest,
because you couldn't possibly know the correct answer, Gordon. It'll all become clear.
It's not another interview with one of his former teammates. come on.
In 2004, operations commenced on the Lewis Green Line in Dublin. According to Google Maps, how long would you need to walk from Brideslen Lewis Station to Broombridge Lewis Station? So if you're walking from Brideslen Lewis Station to Broombridge Lewis Station, how long would it take you?
6 hours.
Gordon, 6 hours, you say.
Where's Broombridge? Which line is that on?
It's on the Green Line, obviously. Yeah.
So I would think about 3 hours.
So you're saying 6 and you're saying 3. The correct answer is 4 hours and 10 minutes. So that means that you're an area
ridiculous. He should be punished for getting British Spears.
Paul Howard is the winner. So Paul, you get one mug and Gordon Darcy, you get 2 mugs. There you go. Super. Well done. And thanks so much for helping us out. Well, that's road
thanks
testing.
Thanks very much on behalf of these 2 mugs. Thank you.
Again, taxi for one.
Yes. Reeling in the Year starts on Monday. And thanks to our quiz test dummies, Gordon Darcy and Paul Howard. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we're over in Studio 8 in the company of Nevin Maguire. How are you doing, Nevin?
Hello, how are you, Ray? You good?
Now, before we do anything else, I have to mention that the lads, as in Paul Howard and Gordon Darcy, are involved in a number of events. They're doing a digital family event at 3 o'clock tomorrow, Saturday the 16th. Tomorrow's the 16th, in collaboration with Offaly Libraries. You can sign up at tickettailor.com by searching Gordon's Game. And they're in person for a children's event with Gordon Darcy, Paul Howard and illustrator Alan Nolan at 3 o'clock in Newbridge Silverware next Saturday, 23rd of October. And you can book into the Newbridge event by emailing gordonsgamenewbridge@gmail.com. gordonsgamenewbridge@gmail.com. And we'll put all that information up on our website if you missed any of that. So Paul Howard, 21 books. Ned McGuire, how many books? How many books?
16.
16. Right, you're playing catch up. Learning to cook with Nevin.
That's it, yeah.
Now,
so
this is brilliant because every recipe is four steps.
That's it. And that's the key to it. Keep it simple, have it practical, have delicious food. And if you want to, you know, for, I suppose, kids, but also adults, there's a lot of adults that don't can't cook. The idea behind this, I was doing kind of Zoom cook-alongs with kids, about 30 of them. We're doing it every Friday with Borbia. And that's how we came up with the idea for doing a very simple book that they can follow, how to chop an onion, the very basics at the back, but also there's 80 recipes, 80 pictures, and then steps, four steps. So that's the beauty about it. It's really, really pared back from any other book have done.
I think it's going to be one of your biggest sellers.
I honestly think so,
yeah, because you've gone through everything, haven't you? You've done the basic as a nearly home economics book, a textbook.
True.
You've done fine dining,
yes,
yeah, and this is somewhere in the middle here.
That's it. Well, that's this is right paired back to the basics and just enjoying it, and just there's a full chapter in it about if your food styling, because what's the one thing we do, we take pictures on our phone,
right?
So it's instant, and just giving them little tips, you know, and also kind of menu ideas, like a movie night, like a Christmas celebration. But this is aimed kind of at kids, but also adults too. So I think it's going to do really well.
Yeah, but there's a number of adults who have never cooked in their
absolutely
lives.
Absolutely. It's phenomenal. And it's never too late to learn.
No, and I think what happens is the longer you leave it, the less likely you are to take it up. So a book like this is sort of entry level.
Well, definitely one thing I've seen, you know, for the whole lockdown, the engagement, and definitely more and more people are cooking. And that's one good thing that's going to come out of it. They're enjoying food. What was the main event of the day? The meal, the dinner.
Yeah.
So that's one good thing that I've seen and is going to definitely kind of going forward. More and more people are interested where their food's coming from, what they're cooking at home. So for me, it ticks all the boxes. Yeah. Good food, cooked from scratch. You know, you're healthier, you're happier. And that's the key.
And McNean House is back open.
We're so happy. We're open since June and we have 60 staff back, and we're still doing 50% less rate, to be honest with you, but it's lovely to people in the building. And
do you find more and more that people are taking pictures of their
I like that. I don't
you
mind.
Encourage it.
Oh,
yeah?
That doesn't bother me.
Right.
It's a big night. You must remember it's an anniversary, it's a celebration, it's a birthday. They take as many pictures, you know, of the food, of the staff, of me, whatever they want. I'm so happy to have people there.
No. Yeah. And of course, to put a filter on it, bring up the colour of it.
No, they don't need that with my food. You said Photoshop. As long as they clear their plate and they enjoy the food experience, I'm very happy with that. Yeah.
So what happens if everything goes according to plan, then next Friday you'll be up to 100%, will you?
I don't know if we'll ever go back to where we were. Definitely learned we have a better way of working, better experience for the guests. You know, we're doing about 53 for dinner tonight, so we would have been doing 90 to 100 a couple of years ago. So if I was to say to the staff, we're doing two sittings, one at 6 and one at 9:30, I think they'd probably cry in my arms. So
that's really interesting though.
Yeah, I definitely think we have a better way of working and a better experience for the guests and less stressful for the staff. You have to think long term. I describe our industry as very fragile because it's difficult getting staff. Thank God 50 of our original staff came back. We took on 10 new staff and so many of them are local. Mm. Like I'm here chatting to you, but my team is working away and that's the beautiful thing. My head chef has been with me for nearly 17 years, right. My restaurant manager. So if you look after your team, that's the key.
But I suppose people are like saying, does that make financial sense for you then?
The rooms are the key because we have 20 bedrooms.
Uh-huh.
So if you add in the bedrooms, you would have to do volume, you know, or look at a different model. It works for us, to be honest with you. And listen, the margins will be tighter because everything's going up, as you know, food costs, everything like that. But, you know, there's more to life. It's about a good quality of life. We're 32 years in business and please God will be another lot of years. So
I was reading about you and thinking about you last week. You gave an interview to one of the papers and you were saying that the people comment on your weight. Is that because people feel they're allowed to because you're on the telly? Is that
probably the wise green TV makes me look twice the size.
Right.
No, I mean, like, you know, when people are very open and honest, and sometimes they say things that really they don't probably stop and think,
right.
You know, but it doesn't bother me. 99% of people are very funny and genuine and they just love the TV, but they feel they can say anything to you. And then when you're the public eye, you know, you're the same. People will say things to you, you know,
they may not mean
it in a bad way, but they're just open and honest. Yeah. And listen, that just...
You look taller on the telly.
Taller, well,
that was my favourite one for me. You look taller on the telly. God, you're a lot balder than you look on the telly.
Oh, jeez.
There's a list of them. Listen, we've talked about this on a number of occasions, but we decided to be honest, I didn't really believe it. So I have to see it for myself. That's the type of man I am. I'm a cynic. So I'm talking about here is the fact that Nevin McGuire DJ'd in nightclubs years ago, and for his 21st birthday, he got two SL1200s. Now, if you don't know what they are, they're sort of the industry standard record players for DJs. Isn't that it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And he's been Instagramming and all sorts of things during lockdown, playing his favourite tunes. And we said to him, we'll get Dex in, bring down some of your favourite tunes. And what did you think, Nevin Maguire?
Well, hold on. First of all, I thought you were winding me up. Yes, and secondly, I forgot to bring records.
Because you thought we were winding you up.
I really did think, because I have thousands of records at home. I have about a collection of 3,000. I mean, like, I've always loved this music, and it's something I never spoke about. And remember, in lockdown, at 8 months, where I had no work. Yes. So Mella got my decks revamped. I got a new mixer last Christmas, and we bought all the records down from the attic. And just a bit of fun. That's all it is.
We've been having great fun with puns. Because, you know, the crossover between chefing and DJing.
Mixing in the kitchen.
He's out of tuna. Yay!
I like that.
Yeah, I should have said that at the end. I think that's the best one. Because that's what they teach in broadcasting school. Always keep the best one to the end, yeah. Crosby, Stills and Nosh. That's not bad.
Okay.
Fleetwood, Big Mac. Yes, yeah. Brack Sabbath. Yay!
Oh, I love it.
That's a Halloween thing. The Granny Smiths. Yeah.
Yes.
Buns and Roses.
Buns.
The Scone Roses. Yeah. Is Nevin going to whisk and shout? Yay!
Yes. You never know. There'll be no shouting. Bit of fun.
So the lads in Little Lane, is it Little Lane? Do we get... No. Session Hire.
Unbelievable.
We got the decks in today.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. And I brought in some of my vinyl. So I'll introduce you to this one. This is my favourite. This is my favourite piece of vinyl I have at home, right?
Okay.
I'm going to play you a bit of it here. Okay, here we go.
Now.
This is... Listen to that.
Hear the quality.
Do you hear that?
Oh, he's playing it too fast.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like throwing my hands up in the air. I know I can count on you.
So you just... Sometimes I feel like... You just lock yourself away in the room.
Yeah,
Imelda and twins are outside, and you just shut the door and turn up volume to 100.
The twins probably think I've lost the plot, to be honest with you. It's only a bit of fun, and it's just literally beside where I live. I have a wee studio where I do movie videos, and I have two decks like this. I haven't got as good a mixer as that, to be honest with you. But it's just all old school vinyl that I've collected all my life. And it came out at Christmas.
And what about going on tour?
Oh, no.
Or maybe bring it, because I know you do all sorts of demonstrations all over the place, right? So you go into local whatever supermarket it is, and you teach them how to do a parcel of salmon or something like that with a lovely hollandaise sauce.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. And then at the end, you take out the decks and you have all the hands in the air.
I know, going mad. You see, I think if you wanted people to leave the building, you'd put on my music. Because I know it's not for everyone. I mean, this music is a required taste. I've always loved it. And I still love it. And Imelda doesn't like it.
Would you stand by this one now?
Well, this isn't a bad one. I mean, like, it's a bit... the feeling... I like that. Hands in the air. It's a bit of fun.
I was thinking you prefer yours. Yeah,
you see, I
like the hits, you know.
And you see, that would be a collector's item, yours. Yeah, I was playing it too fast. You were kind of slowing it down.
Yeah, you see, you can do just that chilling with those, it out. See,
yeah. You can have it really slow.
Speed it up. See, it's a pity because I've already offered my mixing talents to Claire and Breed in earlier on, and I was told to go away, stick to the radio. And now I'm a bit sort of, my self-esteem is down. I was going to suggest that we go on tour together.
Oh, gee, what are you going to
suggest? You know what I mean? What about that? Go on tour.
Well, come here. I'll make the ham sandwiches, the cup of tea.
Yeah, the only question mark is over the billing. You know what I mean? As in, not the financials, but on the poster. Who gets main billing? Is it like... You know, is it...
Sure, I'll be the warm-up.
Is it Nevin Maguire featuring Ray Darcy or Ray Darcy featuring...
No, it's got to be Ray Darcy.
What?
It's more catchy.
Is it?
It's definitely. Is it? Definitely, right. I think so.
Okay.
I'll be your commie chef, your commie DJ.
Brilliant. So, coming to a nightclub near you, Ray Darcy and Nevin Maguire.
What do you like?
Learn to cook with Nevin. Learn to cook with Nevin. Thanks so much for coming down from Black Line.
Great to see you.
Yeah, really good to see you. It seems we have a couple of minutes here. We'll play a bit of this.
Oh, look at it.
Okay. Thanks, Nevin.
I see you're playing your record. Thanks, Ray. Have a good weekend.
There you go, Kenny Satin and The Source. See, I'm all DJ now. That's how it goes, isn't it, Nevin? So Nevin and I will be on the road very shortly, touring the country. We're going to have to make plans about that. Cormac and Sarah on the way with Drive Time. We are back on Monday at 3 o'clock. Enjoy your weekend. Whatever you're doing, do it safely. Thank you.
It's The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.